Okay, no static here. You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. Our webpage is www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. We're heard on satellite AMC3 transponder 7, Digicipher 2 audio, also W3957 on the 4D TV receiver. And of course at the webpage you can listen live, you can listen to podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, whatever. This is the Dana Pretzer Show, and of course my name is Dana Pretzer. Tonight, Jossie Manser, managing editor of Dario, will join me here in just a couple of minutes to talk about allegations made against him by attorney Joe Tacopina on Grid of Ancestors show last night. We'll update you on what's been going on with the Holloway investigation. Lots of breaking news on that today. And then at the bottom of the hour, Wendy Murphy will be here to talk about the Duke rape case. Should be an exciting show. My name's Dana Pretzer. Welcome. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer program on Scared Monkeys Radio for Thursday, December 14th, 2006. If you've been following the Natalie Holloway disappearance investigation, either on my program or other media sources, you will know that in the last 2 weeks, all hell has broken loose, for lack of a better term. Last evening, attorney Joe Tacopina came on the Greta Van Susteren show on Fox News and attacked my guest that I have on the air with me right now, Jossie Manser, managing editor of Dario. Jossie, welcome back to my program.
Thank you. Very nice to be on your program always.
Well, this has turned into, well, quite a week. Before we get into the Tacopina interview last night, I want to get your comments, if you're able to, on the lawsuit filings today that happened in California, Jossie.
Yeah, I understand that the Kalpoo brothers put in a lawsuit against Dr. Phil, Paramount, and some other people. I think that the figure they were mentioning is $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
What do these people want? Do they want to be rewarded for having done so much damage to the island?
Right.
What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly.
I find it totally unreasonable and totally unjust.
Yep, absolutely. And then Beth Twitty and Dave Holloway and their attorney, John Q. Kelly, filed their own lawsuit.
Yeah, I understand that they did, or they're doing it tonight at some time in a program. I think it's on Fox. And that they are counter-suing for an involuntary murder, I believe, involuntary death or whatever they call it. Wrongful death.
Right.
Of their daughter. So these two characters have, I don't know if it's inadvertently or on purpose, they've opened the door for this lawsuit to be placed against them.
Yeah, you have to wonder what kind of legal advice that they've been getting, but I'm glad that John Q. Kelly and the family were on top of things and were able to file their own suit, and hopefully that may bring some answers to this. But the reason I brought you on the program tonight, and I've been corresponding with you since last night when Attorney Takapina was on the Greta Van Susteren program, and you've had a chance, I hope, to watch the video. I did send you a transcript. Jossie, what the heck's going on? What made this man come on the air last night and, in my opinion, attack you?
Because he has absolutely no arguments to defend his client with facts. So what does he do? He tries to sidetrack it, and he tries to pick a fight with me, which he's not going to be able to obtain, because I don't think that we should deviate from the main issue in this case, which is the disappearance of Natalie Holloway while in the company of his client, Joran van der Sloot, and the two Kalpoe brothers. He's trying to take attention away from this, but, you know, I think that instead of teaching Joran to tell the truth, I think Joran has influenced him to tell lies, because everything that he said on that program is a lie, an outright lie. I have never seen a lawyer that can lie so easily and attack people with such freedom while he threatens everybody with lawsuits.
A few weeks back on the lineup program, after you came on and aired the video that you have of Chief or former Chief Dompeg, he called in and had a tantrum, and I'm using that term tantrum, fit, and was basically insulting. This time, though, when he was on the air last night, he made some allegations of your newspaper printing forged documents, that your family was exiled from Aruba by Paulus van der Sloot, a judge in training. I didn't realize they had so much power because of their drug dealing. I'd like you to address some of the allegations that Mr. Takapina made on that Fox program last night.
But of course, he came up with this question of some family members of mine for drug dealing. I think this guy is living in the clouds. I mean, he must not be living in the U.S. He must not be aware of anything that went on in Puerto Rico or Aruba or Miami or whatever. It's completely different. But I'm not going to go into details with him on that, because that's what he wants. He wants to take away attention from the main issue in this case, and that is the guilt of his client. He committed a moral crime against Natalie. That is, in all the reports that I have seen, I have them in front of me here, and I'm not going to fall for his games. These are his lawyer tricks. He thinks that by threatening or calling names or whatever, he's going to intimidate. Well, he's knocking on the wrong door with me.
So you feel that he's trying to bait you into a response?
He is, but he will not get it from me. What I will do is correct his lies and ask him to please, when he goes on television, to tell the truth and to teach his clients to, for once in his life, to begin to tell the truth.
He says that I actually had to laugh at this one, but I'm sure it wasn't funny for you, but that you have a personal vendetta against the van der Sloot family, and that Paulus van der Sloot extradited your family from Aruba. Could you comment on that, or is, if you don't want to get into particulars, does Paulus van der Sloot, as a judge in training, even have that authority?
He's a glorified clerk. He was always a glorified clerk within the prosecution department of the Ministry of Justice here. He doesn't have that power. That power lies only with the governor of Aruba. He has to sign, according to the treaties between the U.S. and Aruba and Holland, the governor has to sign for any extradition. So he doesn't have any power. And honestly, I never knew that he was even involved in that. And I don't know Mr. Van der Sloot personally. I don't know his son. I don't want to know them either after this case. But what he's saying is completely false. I have no personal vendettas against anyone.
One of the comments that came from your last interview with me, Jossie, was your discussion regarding Paulus van der Sloot having a brother in the government in the Netherlands. And I've, again, talked with you about this. I've been swamped with those that have come to me and say that's not true. Can we go over that part of it again just to clarify, please?
Well, we have been informed from Holland, from our sources in Holland. If our sources are wrong, then we will apologize, of course. We have no problems with that. But our sources in Holland tell us that he has a brother called Marco, who is a member of the VVD party, and the party is in government. I think he's in some kind of a committee for economic affairs. But his party also has always helped, while in government, the defense and police affairs of Holland. That's as far as I can tell you about this.
Okay.
Checked with sources in Holland, and they confirmed it to us.
Okay. All right. If you're just tuning in, Jossie Mansour, managing editor of Dario, is with me, and we're discussing recent events in the Holloway investigation. And it certainly has been an interesting couple of weeks. Another serious allegation that Mr. Takapina made on the program last night was that your paper printed a forged document regarding this investigation, and I found that to be quite concerning that he would make that sort of an allegation. Can you comment on that for me?
But if he says that, and if he thinks he has any kind of proof of that, why doesn't he take us to court? Or have Antonio Carlo take us to court, or any other lawyer that he can engage for in Aruba? I mean, blah, 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 blah on the radio or on television is one thing, and going for the real thing is another. I mean, if he thinks or if he is convinced that we forged the documents that we published, he should take us to court. What I can tell you about that, though, is that 3 days after we published that, the prosecution department issued a statement confirming the validity of what was in that paper, confirming it was legitimate. But this guy doesn't know that. I don't know how he's handling this case, if it's from a remote control or what, but he'd better put himself up to date with the facts involved in this case. Because not only in that case is he totally wrong, he also said at one point that the tape that I have with Gerald Dampe
right.
was made while Joran was in jail. I mean, how far off from the truth can you be? I asked Gerald Dampe in the interview, I asked him, listen, when are you going to arrest them? In other words, if I'm asking him, when are you going to arrest them, they must be free. They can't be in jail. They can't arrest them again if they're in jail.
Right.
He doesn't know the facts of this case, Dana.
Yeah, and I think the tape, as important as it is, has been misrepresented somewhat in the media because the whole tape hasn't been shown, and that part is quite clear. He also went on to say that a letter from Karen Janssen disposed the notion that there was any evidence or any comment from these boys admitting that they had committed a moral crime against Natalie, and that that letter was sent to justice officials in the United States. And he used that as a way to disprove the videotape. What are your comments on that, Jossie?
Wrong again, and he's dead wrong with that. I spoke to Karen Janssen today, and she was very explicit in telling me that her words were taken out of context. They were, because this letter was sent in a treaty that we have with the U.S., Aruba and the U.S.,
right.
what we call Rechtshulp, in other words, asking for assistance in an investigation.
Right.
What she did was send that letter for that purpose. Not for the purpose of and she says, and there is no indication. She doesn't say there is no evidence or no proof. She was very careful in her words to the Department of Justice here in the U.S. And I will quote Karen Janssen on the 30th of June 2005 in a NOVA program in Holland, in which she accused Paul van der Sloot, the father of Joran, of presenting obstacles in the case, of obstruction of justice. She says it's very plain in that interview three or four times.
When you look at this case, and I know you and I have discussed this before, but a question that keeps coming up, and in fact I'm looking at the picture here right now on my computer screen, was the alleged picture of a person in the casino with Natalie that looks an awful lot like Paulus. Now, you've seen the picture. I've seen the picture. Has there been any updates as far as that?
There hasn't been any update, but there hasn't been any change of opinions either. The opinions that we've pulled everywhere, including people that work in the casino, say that that is Paulus on the float. I'm talking about opinions now of the people.
Right. Do you know in the investigation, Jossie, whether or not the employees that night at Carlos and Charlie's have been thoroughly investigated as far as any sort of criminal convictions or history, or someone in that bar that maybe knows something that just hasn't come forward yet to talk about it?
No, I'm not aware of any of that. What I do know and what I do tell you now is that we are talking to some of the witnesses in this case, some of the people that have been interrogated by the police. With the passage of time, they're not as afraid anymore to talk. And I think that we're going to get some of the answers that we're looking for from these interviews with these people.
One of my emailers, I think, says it very well when he says he's getting tired of hearing these boys called suspects when, in theory, they are murder suspects. And it's, you know, it's sad, but it's assumed that Natalie has perished. And I'm wondering, with your position, and again, this has come out since the videotape or parts of the videotape has been released, and you're reporting from a reporter's standpoint, and you're speaking with Karen Janssen today, there is a deadline that is coming up. Do you see, and I know I asked you this question last time, but I'll ask you this again, do you see this case going to trial before the period is up as far as the them being considered suspects?
I am sure, I'm convinced, that I can affirm it very publicly that the case will go to court, contrary to Takopina's, again, very wrong opinion. It will go to court. It will be treated in court. It has to.
Now, he's again, getting back to the forged document, information that Takopina says was passed on to him. Let's talk a little bit about, and I don't want you to, this isn't where I'm asking you to defend your newspaper, but as a reporter for your newspaper, before you print something, is there a set of checks and balances that your people go through or you go through to confirm things before they are printed?
Of course we do. Check it with the people that are on the documents itself. Check it with the people who signed the document. For example, we also published one from Jan van der Straten, and it's signed by him, and we spoke to him, and he confirmed it. So we do confirm with our contacts within the police department or the prosecution department before we do any publishing of any sort.
When you spoke with Karen Janssen today, did she give you any indication as far as the status of the investigation with the cold case investigators coming in and relooking at the evidence? Did she give you any hints? I know she's leaving in the next little while. What's the status of that, Jossie?
No, listen, Karen Janssen is a professional, much to the contrary of Takopina. She will not speak about the case with me or with anybody at the DI or with anyone else under any circumstances. What she did tell me is that her term, her contract is over the 1st of February, and that she will be leaving soon afterward. And she did hint to me that this case is not going to be stopped. This case is going to court.
So she probably wouldn't comment then as far as Antonio Carlo paying her a visit?
No, she's never denied or affirmed that publicly. But to De Vries in Holland, she did confirm it.
What has Antonio Carlo been doing here these last few days with all this information coming forward?
I don't know, but I would imagine he feels very uncomfortable with the videotape that we have. Listen, that videotape is about 50 minutes long. What was shown on Fox was just a fraction of it. I mean, some seconds of it, 30 seconds to a minute, not more. We have 50 minutes of exchange of information between the chief investigator and myself. We spoke very openly and very frankly about the case. And he told me categorically that these boys admitted to having committed what he called a moral crime, what I call rape, because the girl was going in and out of consciousness all the time. And this fact is also in the documentations of Joran when they interrogated Joran on the 9th of June 2005. He did repeat on various occasions that the girl was going in and out of consciousness.
Joe Takopina himself mentioned that the investigation has been hindered because of lies and mistruths that his clients have told in this whole investigation. One statement says this, the other statement says that. The physical evidence that may or may not be there, the whole thing has been a mess right from the get-go. I've asked you this before, Josiah, and I'll ask you again. Is this just a case of sloppy investigation, or is this a case where higher-ups have become involved to take away the heat from the island?
We are convinced that the DRI, not only I, but the reporters that I have working on this case, we are convinced that there is an influence that has come into the case from the beginning, from higher up. By higher up, I mean not necessarily only from Aruba. It could have come from Holland, too. We are convinced it's there. We haven't been able yet to pinpoint it, though.
Do you have plans, or has any media organization contacted you for you to air the complete tape of the interview with the chief?
No, they haven't, but I will send you the complete copy so you can put it on the internet, yes. We're working on the translation of it and the interpretation of what is said in Papiamento on the tape.
All right, I'd be glad to help you with that. Josie, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Final words for those that are listening as far as Mr. Takapina's attack on you last night?
Well, I will repeat this. The provocations of Takapina are falling on deaf ears here. We have one commitment that is with ourselves, that is to investigate this case as journalists to the end. And we are going to get to the answers.
Thank you, Josie. Oh, I got one quick question before I let you go. It just came in. It says, this past week, an Aruban court denied the Kelpo brothers' request to be cleared as suspects. Also, a Aruban prosecuting attorney, Karen Janssen, recently returned from Holland, where a new team of Dutch investigators is reviewing all the evidence against the Kelpos and others. Is there any information as far as what she was doing in Holland, Josie?
Well, I think she went for some work at Holland. I don't know what kind of work. I don't know if it's related to this case. I would imagine she must have talked to someone of the Dutch team that are busy with this. But we don't know exactly what took her to Holland, no.
Okay. Josie, it's always a pleasure having you on the program. We'll stay in touch, and I know everyone appreciates what you're doing to help get some answers in this case.
Thank you.
Thanks, Josie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Josie Manser, managing editor of Dario. I'll take a break. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Well, all my friends are bopping the blues. It must be going round. All my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the doctor told me, boy, you don't need no pill. Yeah, that doctor told me, son, you don't need no pill. Just a handful of niggas and jukebox to cure your ill. Well, my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. All them cats are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the cat will bid me, man, I don't feel no pain. Yeah, jitterbug caught me, man, I don't feel no pain. I still love you, baby, but I'll never be the same. Yeah. Bopping the blues, it must be going round. All my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, I must be rhythm bound. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues, oh baby. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues. A rock, bop, a rhythm and blues. A rhythm and blues, it must be going round.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pritzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We've got about 9 minutes until we bring on Fox News contributor, legal analyst, law professor, former DA Wendy Murphy. She'll be here to talk about the Duke rape case and the information that's come out about it. So we've got some time for some calls now. Toll free, 1-877-842-7884, 1-877-842-7884. What do you think about all this? What do you think? There's been a lot happening in this case, a lot happening. Again, I did invite Dave Holloway to come on the program. He responded that his lawyer, John Q. Kelly, has asked that the family not do any press interviews for a few days now that this lawsuit has been filed. We will stay on top of the story. The Calpo brothers being sued by the family for wrongful death. Dr. Phil McGraw and the Dr. Phil Show, Paramount, etc., being sued by the Calpos for defamation. The information that's come out from Jossie Mansour, Joe Tacopina's response, now Jossie's response. We don't want to get away from the focus of solving this case, but it's also very clear that there has been a mess, a big mess, involved with this whole thing for quite some time now, and it's time that it stopped. It's time that the family got some answers. It's time that someone was punished for committing a crime, and it's time that Natalie was returned home so she can be laid to rest and their family can try and have some peace. My name's Dana Pritzer. This is the Dana Pritzer Show. Again, our webpage, www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can listen to the show live. You can hear podcasts of past shows, download them to your iPod or your Peapod or whatever you do. You can listen to them live. We do a daily commentary also on the webpage where I talk about items of interest that I think you might be interested in, that I'm interested in, and all that sort of stuff. We have a lot of fun doing it. Of course, we're still on satellite, AMC 3, transponder 7, DigiCypher 2 audio. If you have a DSR 4D TV, W3957. In about 7 minutes until we bring on Wendy Murphy, so we'll take some calls toll-free, 1-877-842-7884, 1-877-842-7884. You know, I think the emailer said it good, or said it best, that, you know, he's getting tired of hearing these people considered as suspects. They're suspects in what crime? Well, the crime is murder, okay? The crime is murder. Whether they're charged or convicted of something else is fine, but he's suggesting that the media start looking at naming them as murder suspects. Defense lawyers may say there's absolutely no evidence against them. Other lawyers may say there's lots of evidence against them. This investigation has been tied up, has been messed up, has been buggered up right from the get-go, and it's time that it gets on a straight track. We'll see if that happens. But you have to admit, besides the early days, there hasn't been this much information, this much craziness, if you want to call it, coming out of this investigation in a long time. And like the family says, there somebody needs to be punished for taking Natalie. 1-877-842-7884. That's toll-free, 1-877-842-7884. You know, Jossie, he's going to send me this tape, and I'll see the whole thing. We'll get it up on the internet. What did he say, 50 minutes or 52 minutes? Joe Tacopina says one thing. Jossie says another thing. You know, calling someone names, disrespectful names, and then making allegations of printing forged documents, making allegations that your family are drug dealers, and saying that someone who by all indications was only a judge in training exiled them from the country. I would like to have, and I have asked, I've sent several correspondence to Joe Tacopina, and he's not responded. He is welcome to come on the program anytime and answer these questions or these concerns that have come up and give his side or his client's side, but he's chosen not to respond. 1-877-842-7884. I can sneak in a quick call before we bring Wendy Murphy. Again, Wendy Murphy will be on here in a couple of minutes to discuss what's been going on in the Duke rape case. Boy, has that thing turned goofy. all of a sudden now some disclosure comes to the defense lawyers, and buried in that disclosure is there's lots of DNA, but there's no DNA from the suspects. So what's going on here? Is this incompetence? Is this a cover-up? Is this a shoddy investigation? Is this a case where something actually did happen to the victim and she's not getting justice, isn't serving her? Or is this a case where these young guys are being railroaded through the system and taken advantage of? I don't know. Wendy Murphy will be here in just a couple of minutes to discuss just that. My name is Dana Pretzer. You are listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Wendy Murphy.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about the joint. He claimed he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, long tall Sally, she's a bit of a species guy. Everything that Uncle John need, oh, baby. He saw Aunt Mary coming and he ducked back in the alley, oh baby. Yes, baby. Ooh, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah.
This is the Dana Pretzer Show on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. I'll read right from the press release. Key DNA evidence in Duke rape case withheld from defense for 6 months. Lawyers charge buried in thousands of documents handed over to defense lawyers by the district attorney. In the Duke rape case was a stunning report from a private lab hired by the prosecution that found DNA from multiple males in the accuser's body, but none that belonged to the accused players. You know, is this a case of shoddy investigation of a DA looking to get elected, a case where a victim is not getting justice, or a case of young boys that are being railroaded through the system? Fox News contributor, legal analyst, law professor, and former DA Wendy Murphy joins me. Wendy, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Dana.
This is wacky, I'll tell you. Hasn't the news been going crazy with all these stories? What's going on with this one?
Yeah, this story in particular seems to get a lot of coverage, even if there's not a lot of news.
Right, yeah.
And I think that speaks volumes about the power of the defendants and who they are and how that resonates most of middle America, if you will, and that's, you know, a big part of how the demographic decision-making is made when it comes to news, especially in criminal cases. But, you know, the thing to keep in mind is that, and I always think people forget this, there's no question that the defense has a far more flexible capacity to speak publicly during the pretrial period, because they really can't get in trouble. They can literally say whatever they want and not get in trouble, where the prosecution is really held to a much higher standard. They, you know, they have to worry about the defendant's fair trial rights and whether they're tainting the jury pool. And cases can get dismissed when the prosecutor says even truthful things out loud prior to trial. You know, there's no question that nothing happens to the defense when they say even false things prior to trial, and I don't think the public quite understands the nature of that double standard. The bottom line is, it's really irresponsible for people to make judgments about this case at this point in time. You know, like any case, the place for judgments to be made is in the courtroom, and there's no reason to believe that this case is unworthy of having a jury make the ultimate decision.
Absolutely. It taints it. It takes away from a victim who is being run through the press, even though that she's not commenting on anything, and it's making a mockery of the system. And I'm curious, Wendy, your thoughts on the media and how these types of cases are reported. It seems to slant one way. When something like this gets released, then it's shame on that prosecutor. What is he doing? He should be disbarred, blah, 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 blah. But they're not talking about the fact that a young girl has alleged to have been raped. That simple.
Yeah, brutally. You know, the funny thing is, the media, to some extent, is blameworthy, but you also can't fail to see why they do what they do. They write stories based on information they get, and
right.
They don't get information from the prosecutor for the reasons I just said. They get lots of information from the secret sources, from the defense, from anyone who has the freedom to speak publicly and who has a strategic interest in speaking publicly, and 99% of the time it's the defense. So we really do hear way more from the defense, which is to say most of the media coverage in cases like this is favorable to the defense, not because the case is bad, but because only the defense has the capacity and the flexibility and the legal freedom to say the things that they're saying. And it's really unfortunate. I have a book coming out in July where one of the chapters I write is all about this, and I call for reforms in the laws so that there can be more sanctions against defense attorneys who make prejudicial pretrial statements about victims. Either that or loosen up the freedom of prosecutors to correct misstatements. I mean, one of the things I think is interesting about this case is people keep saying it's a terrible case, it's a terrible case, it's all lies. And, you know, the bottom line is there were, I don't know how many guys there, 30 or so guys. I think the odds are pretty darn good that several of them, if not many of them, is cooperating and has testified or produced some evidence to corroborate what the victim has said. And, boy, I'll tell you, the reason I think that's true, and if it is true, that's very damning evidence against the guys. And the reason I suspect it's true is not because I know any inside information. It's that the extent to which the noise from the defense camp is really just deafening leads me to believe that the case actually must be quite strong. In other words, you don't have to go through all these very significant efforts to try to slam the prosecutor, calls for him to be investigated by the federal authorities, and all the incredibly vicious things that are being said about the prosecutor, you know, the stuff on 60 Minutes. To me, the strength of the case is almost always measured against the noise the defense makes during the pretrial period in an attempt to politically persuade the prosecutor to drop the charges and intimidate the victim if the defense thinks they can't win at trial. So I take from all of this that the defense must be terrified of going to trial because they'd otherwise have no reason to be doing all this.
Defense lawyers must be loving it. Put yourself in Mike Nifong's shoes right now. What do? You just keep going on with your case and obviously keep quiet, or what? He can't seem to win for losing, especially in the...
I disagree with that, Dana, because I think he is going to become the benchmark by which all prosecutors' conduct in the future in high-profile cases will be measured, because he's doing exactly the opposite of what the prosecutor was doing in the Kobe Bryant case.
Right.
He was really, I think, being intimidated and trying to play defense and reactionary prosecutorial strategies, where what I see in Nifong is a kind of quiet confidence. He's not taking the bait, and they are trying, believe me. Every single day, it seems, there's somebody saying something, really trying to goad him and bait him into saying something in response, and he's saying nothing. And I think that speaks volumes, both about the strength of the case, his confidence in the case, and I think it's probably driving the defense absolutely crazy that the guy is not budging, because the only thing they're doing is trying very hard to politically pressure him to at least give a little. And I think what it's doing is making him even more committed, because he does have a reputation for caring about the integrity of his cases and for being smart and for being morally dedicated to his work. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, he did this for political reasons. Let me tell you something. He almost lost his election because of what he did. There's no way he gained black votes because of what he did. In fact, he had a minority opponent. And he didn't get as many votes as the minority opponent did, so he certainly didn't gain black votes, and he lost a ton of relatively wealthy white votes, which potentially could have bumped him out of the office altogether. And he knew that. He knew that by going on with this case, he potentially could have lost his seat, and he did it anyway. And anyone who suggests that he did this for political reasons is a fool, because the way politics works is, you know, it's people with money who cause re-elections, and Mike Nifong knew he was going to take a big financial hit. And look what happened as a result.
Yeah.
He got all kinds of negative attention that did affect the votes. They put up a Republican against him who had absolutely no experience. They would, you know, the people who were mad at him were just desperate to do something. And now they're using their political power, wealth, and influence to try to get him investigated by the feds, and they're filing ethical complaints against him. All of this bully stuff and all of this intimidation tactic that's going on is just, I think, unprecedented, and I give him a lot of credit. I hope he wins Prosecutor of the Year Award once the truth comes out, and I really hope that the silence and of the victim and the silence of the prosecution at the end of the day becomes, again, the standard by which we see other cases handled, because it's going to happen again, a case like this, and I think everyone should take a lesson and do exactly what they're doing, which is not taking the bait and staying silent and being quiet and confident in their evidence.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. Let's speculate just for a second. I know we don't know the exact facts, but let's have a case that you're prosecuting and I've brought to you, and the DNA reports come back. Let's assume that what's in the media here is accurate. Do you need that DNA, or how damning or how necessary is it as far as a prosecution goes?
You know, the problem is not so much the presence or absence of DNA, because there are a lot of studies that say the vast majority of rape cases produce no DNA evidence whatsoever, and in over 90% of rape cases, DNA is irrelevant. If it is present, it's completely irrelevant. So, you know, I prosecuted a number of rape cases. I don't think I used DNA but a couple of times in my entire career, or even forensic evidence, because it's not usually present. And because even when it is present, it doesn't matter, because the issue is, did she consent?
Right.
Now, here what's interesting is the defense suggestion that, well, she had other people's DNA in her genitals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so do every single sexually active person on the planet, presumably, right? If you're having sex, you've got someone's DNA in your body, and there's absolutely no law against it. So I could care less if she's got 85 people's DNA in her body. The bottom line is she's free to do what she wants, and to suggest that tells us something about what happened on the night in question, I think, is silly, particularly if you accept the other information that we're hearing about the forensic, what one should expect as a forensic matter, because according to the victim's description, the three different guys assaulted her very quickly. And, you know, it didn't take that long for the sexual assaults to take place. And if you believe that it all happened very quickly, then you wouldn't really expect to see much in terms of forensic evidence. And There was some DNA found. You know, one of the guys, I think Seligman's DNA was found on her fingernail. He says, well, you know, you expect that because it was my bathroom. Well, no, you actually wouldn't expect your DNA to land on her fingernail. You'd actually have to have a little bit better justification for that. And, you know, guys aren't dummies. Forensic science isn't news. For a very long time, people who assault others in a sexual way have been aware of the importance of not leaving any evidence at the crime scenes, quote-unquote crime scene. And, you know, I can think of a case from 20 years ago here in Massachusetts where a rapist, this is before DNA technology, he knew that he was going to get in trouble in terms of even having his body fluids and potential blood types secreted into his body fluids found at the crime scene. So when they took a swab from the inside of his mouth, he borrowed saliva from one of his cellmates and smushed it into his mouth so that when they took the swab, it made the test, it made a mess of the test. So people who assault others are aware of the importance of not leaving any evidence at the crime scene. And one of the guys, you know, left immediately. As you know, one of the guys, I think it's Seligman again, was saying that he couldn't possibly have done this crime because he had cell phone proof of his innocence. I hope I'm remembering the guy's names correctly. But the
one who said
he had absolute proof that he wasn't there because his cell phone record showed that he was in a taxi cab somewhere. In fact, the amount of time that the rape occurred, easily he could have been the first assailant. Then he probably thought to himself, this is a theory, he thought to himself, I better get out of here because I don't want to be, I don't want to get in trouble, I don't want to get caught, so I'm out of here. And what's interesting is he makes 9 cell phone calls in the next several minutes. I mean, really, sort of an urgency to his cell phone calls where he's calling the taxi over and over and over again. Like he can't wait to get out of Dodge, and
where
then he books it out of there.
Yep.
A lot of people have argued, and I think it's reasonable, that that suggests he was involved and he was running from the scene. And when the police finally did show up 45 minutes later, the house was empty. What were they all running from?
Yep.
Why doesn't anybody want to talk about the fact that the entire house was empty? And if nothing had happened, if there wasn't any assault, there would have been no reason for everybody in the house to take off. But it was an empty house when the police got there because they were running out of fear that somebody was going to get in trouble for a very serious crime.
As usual, well said. Mike Nifong, Prosecutor of the Year. Wendy Murphy, always a pleasure.
Fine too, Dana. Take care.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You swing down, sweet chariot, stop, let me ride. Swing down, chariot, stop, let me ride. Rock me, Lord, come and easy. We'll find a gun home on the other side. Swing down, sweet chariot, stop, let me ride. Swing down, chariot, stop, let me ride. Rock me, Lord, come and easy. We'll find a gun home. Ezekiel went down in the middle of the field. He saw an angel working on the chariot wheel. Wasn't he so particular about the chariot wheel? Just wanted to see how the chariot wheel would run. Why don't you swing down, sweet chariot, stop and let me ride. Swing down, chariot, stop and let me ride. Down and got on board. Chariot went a bumping on down the road. Zeke wasn't so particular about the bumping of the road. Just wanted to lay down his heavy load. Why don't you swing down, sweet chariot, stop and let me ride. Swing down, chariot, stop and let me ride. Rock and Lord, come and easy. Well, I've got home on the other side. Well, I got a father in the promise.
promised land. He ain't gonna stop until I shake his hand. Rock me, Lord, come and easy. I've got home on the other side.
Why don't you swing down, sweet chariot, stop and let me ride.
Swing down, chariot, stop and let me ride. Rock me, Lord, come and easy. Will I got home on the other side.
All right, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Thanks to Jossie Mansour and Wendy Murphy for joining me this evening. Now it's your turn. It's toll-free. Doesn't cost you anything. What do you think? Are they both full of crap? Are they wonderful guests that know exactly what they're talking about? Or is yours truly the host just full of hot air? I don't know. I think that it's been a hell of a week as far as the Holloway investigations, Duke Rape scandal. It's been fascinating news. Been fascinating news for sure, and lots of good information, and hopefully we'll get some answers. The positives have been there, the negatives have been there. I've never had so many emails and phone calls in all my life, and we're trying to be, and I know I'll get slammed for this, but I'm going to say it anyway, we're trying to be objective here and give all sides. And when Joe Tacopina can go on Greta Van Susteren and make allegations the way he made them, I'm going to give Jossie Mansour a chance to come on this program and answer to those. And I thought he did a great job tonight. Toll free, 1-877-842-7884. 1-877-842-7884. That's toll free. You can call in and discuss the evening's events. What do you think about the lawsuits? Dr. Phil McGraw, Paramount, sued by the Kelpos. The Twitty Holloway family suing the Kelpos. This tape, Jossie Mansour is going to send it to me, and we'll get it on there. We'll take a look at all 50 minutes. You'll have an opportunity to see all 50 minutes, not just a few seconds like you do in the mainstream media. What do you think? Am I way out there? Am I dead wrong? You call, you tell me. 1-877-842-7884. Don't forget, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. You'll be able to hear, I know I'm getting some emails that some missed the interview with Jossie. Well, the podcast will be available later on this evening. Just go to that webpage and you'll either have an opportunity to download or play right from the webpage if you want to listen to it. You can download it as many times as you want, listen to it tomorrow, do whatever. Absolutely go and check that. And it's usually available about 30 minutes, 45 minutes after the show. You can also hear my daily commentary. You can listen to past shows. You can leave comments. You can do whatever you want. Again, that's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. Again, my toll-free number, 1-877-842-7884. We've got about 10 minutes left in the program. That gives you an opportunity to call in and tell me what you think. I'm getting lots of email. There's some folks having problems listening with Media Player. Winamp, you know, I think Winamp is the best way to go. That's just my personal opinion. I'm not telling you to download Winamp to your computer, but www.winamp.com, www.winamp.com, and just download the free player there. It's not going to hurt your system. You can download it, and that's probably one of the better players to use to listen to the program. I'm not sure on all the technical side of it that Tom has set up, but I know you can go to the webpage and you can actually just click play on the show that you want to hear or the daily commentary you want to hear and listen right from there. Or, of course, like I say, if you want to download it and listen to it in pieces, you know, half today, half tomorrow, whatever, put it on your iPod, listen to the daily commentary, do whatever you like. It's certainly there for you. 1-877-842-7884. I will stay on the air as long as you are willing to call in. because I can only talk so much, and then I start repeating myself. We don't want to do that. I do ask you to check out scaredmonkeys.com at www.scaredmonkeys.com, obviously, for all the news and information of today. There's a forum there that you can join. You can see everything from high-profile cases to politics to crime to humor to news of the day to whatever. And, of course, again, the radio webpage, scaredmonkeys.com/radio. I'll take another break and then come back and see if you are interested in calling in. If not, we'll call it an evening. If you are, then I will stay on and take calls as long as you want to send them in.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. Though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. Time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I love you.
Okay, we'll give one more chance for you to call in toll-free, 1-877-842-7884, 1-877-842-7884. You can call in toll-free. If not, then we'll call it an evening. I want to thank Jossie Mansour and Wendy Murphy for dropping in around the program. Again, don't forget, if you missed part of the program and lots of you are emailing saying you did, the show will be available on the Scared Monkeys Radio webpage at scaredmonkeys.com/radio soon. It's 4 minutes to 10 Eastern. If it's not up there tonight in the next hour or so, then I would suggest that you check back in the morning and it will be available for you to play. And again, check out the webpage, listen to my daily commentary, or anything like that. It's always appreciated. Special thanks to my guests, Wendy Murphy and Jossie Mansour, and thanks to you for listening. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
Yeah. shining star. No matter who you are, shining bright to see.